Welcome to the first episode of Crossover Daily, Sports Illustrated's daily NBA podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Nadkarni, and today on the show, we'll be talking about an epic night of NBA action. The Denver Nuggets completed a 3-1 comeback in their second round series against the Clippers with a decisive Game 7 victory last night, led by Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. We'll also be talking about the Celtics and the Heat's Game 1 thriller in the East Finals, with Miami taking a 1-0 lead thanks to a massive, gigantic, shocking, earth-shattering block from Bam Adebayo in overtime to preserve the win. Joining me to break this all down is the Ringer's Paolo Ughetti. Let's start the show. Okay, so joining us right now on the inaugural episode of Crossover Daily, he's one of my closest friends here in Los Angeles. He's a staff writer at The Ringer, a graduate of the Annenberg School of Journalism at USC, the Wilt Chamberlain of Hinge, and a taco enthusiast. Please welcome Paolo Ughetti. Paolo, how's it going, my man?
What an intro. I definitely take issue with one of those things you said, but we don't need to get into that. But thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. I'm always happy to drag you down into the filth where I live. I mean, just one of the more memorable days of NBA basketball in the longest time. I'm so excited that we get to talk about this right now. I'm so excited this is the first episode. Could not have asked for two better games. I think we obviously have to start with Game 7 between the Clippers and the Nuggets. The Nuggets pulling off a huge upset, coming all the way back from 3-1. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic just thoroughly outplaying Kawhi and Paul George in Game 7. In terms of the most shocking playoff results over the last few years, where does this one rank for you? Because I think it's number one for me.
It's so weird because on paper, it is by far one of the most shocking quote-unquote upsets you could talk about. But in another way, you know, as somebody who was at a bunch of Clippers games throughout the season when we could still go to games, you could see that there just was never a complete cohesion there. You know, they would look amazing based off their talent alone. So in some ways, you could have predicted that them not gelling together, them not having this chemistry, was going to come back to bite them. But regardless, I think it's more just the manner in which it happened, which is being up 3-1, allowing Denver to come back, and then looking like the way they did in Game 7 is just stunning, because it was completely, they were just, it seemed like they didn't want to be on the court.
Yeah, they really just, I don't want to say folded or gave up. I think that's a little unfair to them, but they just didn't have it in the second half, especially. And you think Kawhi Leonard's going to be the best player on the floor. I mean, they have two second-team all-defenders and Paul George, you know, three world-class defenders right there, and Pat Bev, Kawhi, and Paul George. And they had no answer for the Murray-Jokic pick and roll. I mean, Denver's running the same thing down the floor every time. They just had no answer for it. Paul George didn't look confident shooting. It just was a complete breakdown. It was weird.
It's so ironic that the Clippers, one of the Clippers' most powerful plays, if you will, is that Trez Lou Will pick and roll, and instead it was the Nuggets combination of that was killing them. And honestly, like, if you were to ask me, did I see a successful Lou Will Trez pick and roll in this entire, you know, in the last four games, I feel like I would say no, because I just don't remember them looking like themselves any part of the last three games. And that's obviously like one of the symptoms of how poorly they played.
For sure. And I don't want to pile on Montrez too much, because obviously he's dealing with so much, but this was a rough series for him, and could not have happened at a worse time with him entering free agency this summer. A really, really rough series for him. And every time he was on the court, It was, you know, whatever chicken dish you want to call it, chicken shawarma, chicken lulé kebab, barbecue chicken, thundery chicken, chicken tikka masala, whatever alert you wish to fire, that's what it was for Jokic whenever he saw Montrezl Harrell in the series. It was nuts.
And it was also just you know, while I understand that if you're Doc, you kind of have to play him in some capacity, it was the almost stubbornness, if you
stubbornness,
will,
yes.
To keep putting him out there. Even seeing how poorly he was doing, it's crazy that we got to this point, and the depth that we talked about the Clippers having all season is just non-existent. They're having to rely on Reggie Jackson, and it's just incredible. It's just like, this team is not who we thought they were.
And we're going to get into Clippers fatalism in a second. You know, the free agency's upcoming in a year and Doc Rivers' future and what this all means. But a conversation I want to have, and I don't want to get carried away, but I know you've come around in the Nuggets. You were a skeptic, and now you've seen the light. I've shown you the way. I've brought you into the promised land that is Nuggets Hive, hashtag Nuggets culture. But I think we need to have a conversation about the fact that Nikola Jokic outplayed Kawhi Leonard over the last three or four games of the series. And in a game seven, it was Jokic and Murray who were the two best players on the floor. That's a huge push forward for just the Nikola conversation and what he can be as the lead guy on a team.
100%. I mean, first of all, I just want to, I don't want to give you all the credit for indoctrinating me here into Nuggets culture, but I have no problem admitting that I've been a Nuggets skeptic in the past. And I think that's been a product of a couple of things. One is just obviously their youth. And two, it always felt like they just lacked that guy who we would, you know, tag as a superstar. And obviously Jokic has been inching toward that status. I mean, he's been a star, obviously, but he's been going closer and closer to that upper tier of stars in the league. That this is exactly what you would wanted to see from him in this season in terms of him solidifying that place. I mean, I, like I said, I was a skeptic, but I can't say anything now. Like, they have made me a full believer there, and not just Jokic, but the way Murray has played and the way he's evolved into being somebody who you can count on in crunch time. And the fact that they're so young, it's wild. It really is a product of their continuity and also the leaps that Jokic and Murray keep making. Like, Jokic just has gone from, in the last 2 years or 3 years, he's gone from a novelty to pretty much a certainty. And it's been remarkable to see. You can't deny them anymore.
For sure. And I want to get to the Clippers in 1 second. One thing I just want to add, and I don't want to get carried away with this thought or act like what happened in the series or what's happening this year in the bubble is a paradigm shift, because it's so hard to extrapolate from this current situation. It's unlike anything the NBA has seen before. I, as a fan of the league as a whole, I think it's great that we're seeing three teams in the conference finals that were built in a very specific way, which is, you know, sound organizations, good front offices, bringing players along for multiple years. I mean, obviously the Heat, it's a little bit more of a blend of both. You know, they went out and got someone like Jimmy Butler, but they also have guys like Bam, Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, players they've developed in-house that have been playing a huge role. Same thing for the Nuggets. You know, this core has been together for 3 years. They've played in some huge games together. The Celtics, I mean, this is Jason Tatum, his third year, second conference finals already. So I don't think we're going to see a shift in philosophy in terms of how NBA teams are built. They're still going to go after the stars. Free agency is still going to be huge, but I think it's a great look for the league right now that we're seeing three teams kind of not these massive underdogs, but they were built in a specific way, and it's a nice kind of counterbalance to what we've seen in the league over the last few years.
Totally. No, I think that's a really interesting point. I would say, like, I would categorize them perhaps slightly differently, in that I would put the Heat and the Celtics in one category, which is they have the sound organizations and sound role players around the players that they went and got. You know, for the Celtics, obviously that's Kemba, which is not the same as getting Kyrie, you know. But, and for the Heat, that's obviously Jimmy. And it's just the right place, right time, right situation around those stars. Whereas Nuggets are just such a, they're far more of the novelty for me, in the sense that they really just, this is, like you said, this is the exact core that they've been building with. And they actually got over the hump. You know, last year they went to a game seven and lost, you know, before the conference finals. And this year they actually got over that hump. And it's such a, you're right, it's a cool kind of different way to you know, to approach building a team, especially now these days when, you know, everybody says the NBA is a copycat league. And, you know, once stars started moving, everybody's, you know, searching for the next big star. But the Nuggets are here like, We're going to stick with what we have and see how far that can take us. And the fact that it's taken them this far already is pretty remarkable.
It's a win for organic growth. So That's a lot about the Nuggets. Let's talk about the Clippers. Right off the bat, you know, you have to wonder if Doc Rivers is a little bit on the hot seat here. His second kind of high profile blown 3-1 lead as the coach of the Clippers, obviously a very different team. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can both be free agents in 2021. They mortgage their future to put this roster together. Montrezl Harrell is going to be a free agent this summer. Not a lot of draft picks coming in. I mean, this is a team that was built to win right now. They have to continue to push their chips to the middle. I don't think we're going to see a huge roster overall in terms of breaking up Kawhi and Paul George or anything of that matter. But how worried are you right now if you're the Clippers that you're going out in the second round? Do you chalk it up to the bubble or are you nervous?
That's the crazy part, is that you can kind of chalk up anything you want to the bubble. It depends on how you shape that story, because even the Clippers themselves, you know, post game, we're talking about, you know, some players miss time, you know, obviously Lou, Trez and Pat Beverly all miss a certain point of the bubble experience for different reasons. So you could talk yourself into this being such a weird year that in some ways it probably benefited the Nuggets a lot that they had that continuity, because they were able to now come back from 3-1 twice. Like, that's not every team is able to do that. And the Clippers clearly did not have that chemistry or that sort of resolve that you would want a team to have in a tough situation like this. So I think you could, if you're the Clippers, you're probably not going to panic. You're probably just going to make sure that, you know, next year everything is to a T, if you will, even though this was expected to be that year. It's funny because I think that while I do agree that we should talk about the fact that, you know, Paul George and Kawhi did sign 1-year deals and 2-year deals, and next year they'll be free agents, just the same way we're talking about Giannis, I do think that it doesn't feel like Paul George and Kawhi are in the mindset to, like, they're far less, I guess, willing or prone to leaving, just because it seemed like they both really wanted to come back and be in LA for the rest of their careers, or at least for a good chunk of time. So I don't think they should be panicked in the sense of like, oh, these guys are going to leave. But I also think that now it creates an incredible amount of pressure going into next season.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 1, the Heat winning an overtime thriller against the Celtics. First, at the end of regulation, it looks like Miami's going to win the game. Jimmy Butler hits a go-ahead three. The Celtics tie it off a free throw that may or may not been the result of a Marcus Smart flop. Heat end up winning in overtime. Jimmy Butler goes to the line, hits a free throw after an and one, or I guess it was the and one. I don't know how you say that. I've never really known how you say that. Anyway, the play of the game, Magic Johnson called it the best defensive play he's ever seen in the playoffs. Bam Adebayo blocking Jason Tatum at the rim and getting the rebound from it, by the way, perhaps just as impressive, sealing the win for the Heat. Paolo, that was an insane game. I said the series was a toss-up, and I thought the Celtics looked like the better team for large stretches. I don't know how Miami pulled it out. What was your immediate reaction to that Bam play, that Bam block?
I don't know if it was a gasp. I don't know if it was a yell. I don't know what it was, but it was incredible. It was just so stunning to watch, because that's the type of player where you see Tatum go in there and you're like, oh, this is going to be a poster dunk. And then suddenly it just dissolves.
Oh, it was a poster. It was a poster.
Oh, it was, you're right. No, it was a poster. It's like a backwards poster or something. Yeah. Man, no, it was crazy. And I think it also just showed how close this series is going to be.
Yes.
And I think you're right in the sense that the Celtics look like the better team in different stretches. But I think the way that Miami plays and this kind of aura of fighting and grinding it out that they have is exactly why the series is going to be even, because the Celtics have the upper hand in terms of talent, perhaps overall talent. But when it comes down to it, the way that it's executed on the court, that gap, if you will, is pretty much accounted for by the way the Heat play and the way they never seem to be really out of it.
For sure. I think what we saw in game one was, you know, Duncan Robinson struggled. I'm not surprised by that. I think it's going to be a tough series for him. Boston's just so good on the wing, defending him. And beyond that, it's going to be really tough for him to play defense because they're going to attack him. He got into foul trouble. I still think this series is going to come down to you know, both teams were hunting switches there at the end of the game. And I just think Boston has a little bit more to attack than Miami has to attack. That might mean one more guy. You know, the Heat are going to play Dragic and Hero down the stretch. The Celtics are going to play Kemba. And I just think the Celtics have that one more player to attack. I think Tatum is just a more reliable jump shooter than Jimmy Butler, even though Jimmy hit the big three and Tatum missed all his shots down the stretch. This series is almost one that if it was 15 games, I might be more comfortable in picking Boston, but seven is almost too small of a sample size for these series because it's just going to be so tight.
No, exactly. And I think you're right in that shot, Tatum has a shot making a little bit, you know, a little bit more than Jimmy, but like, that's what I'm saying is like, this is a series and the Heat are a type of team where you start to believe in like, things like, you know, like clutch gene, and the way that Jimmy was making some of those shots today, you're just like, this guy just knows that in the last 4 minutes he's going to be able to take over and hit every shot he wants, which is crazy because he's not that reliable of a shooter anyway. So it was just, I don't know, the Heat just have something about them that is hard to explain or even quantify that makes me trust them more. And I think we kind of saw glimpses of that in game one, but hold on, I'm not gonna let you not take off your host hat here and talk to me through your feelings during that band block as a quote unquote Heat fan.
Okay. As someone who grew up in South Florida, you know, lived there for most of my life after moving here from Bombay, that band block brought out a side of me that I didn't know still existed. I was yelling like I had not yelled in many years, maybe since the Ray Allen three. And I scared my dog. My dog didn't know what was going on. I was yelling, bam. I was yelling, woo. I've never like wooed before in my life. And I wooed at this
shot. Jeremy Woo.
A big scream. I almost opened my window, but the air quality is so bad in Los Angeles that it wasn't safe. But just absolutely let expletives, bams, and woos fly. And I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe. I knew Bam was going to meet him at the rim, and I thought at best, okay, there's going to be a foul. Maybe he'll get, you know, verticality, and the refs won't call anything. Never in a million years did I think he was going to unleash a block like that.
The pictures of it are wild. His wrist is bending at a 90-degree angle, and it's like fully, it's almost in the hoop, and he's blocking it. It's insane.
It really is insane. It's going to be, I think, a classic series. You know, obviously the thinnest of margins, as you can see. It took someone's hand bending backwards into the rim to preserve a win in game one. Paolo, hopefully we didn't make you try that hard on the podcast today as Bam did on that block. Thank you so much for being the first guest on Crossover Daily.
Of course. Thanks for having me.